We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
It is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. We are the Rallying Royers Ford at McGurk's, presented by Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey. Terrell Owens will be with us at 5 o'clock, along with Hugh Douglas with us at 5 o'clock. Be here for the fireworks. If you're not here, you should at least listen to it. Joining us now, fireworks as always, is the great Larry Anderson. What's up, L.A.?
L.A.
How you guys doing? How's everybody?
Ah, dude. We're feeling good, brother. We're feeling good.
Nice. I'm still trying to get over my jet lag. I learned that from Jeff Stone. When Jeff Stone got called up from Hawaii to the Phillies, I asked him how he's doing. He said, oh, man, I still got them jet legs. It's not jet lag. It's jet leg.
Right. Jet lag.
Jet lag. Oh, Jeff Stone, man. I haven't heard that name in forever. Yeah, that's a real throwback. You got any good Pat Combs stories while we're at it? Anything? Bruce Ruffin? Just trying to think of guys from the same era.
About that time.
Yep. Monday's win. Best win of the year for you? It felt like that to me watching that. It was completely unexpected, I thought.
Yeah, I think it was a tremendous game. And I think just it had to do wonders, I think, just for the Philly psyche. I think just getting down early and not doing a whole lot, and then all of a sudden back and forth, and you know, every time they the Brewers answered the bell, the Phils answered it right back. So it just was a great game, and it was tremendous.
So I want to try to get into the psyche of not this specific clubhouse. I'm not asking you to talk for them, just in general, in that. So they get swept against the Mets, and we as fans feel miserable, right? They have the win against the Brewers, and we as fans feel great. Now, the message from the team is always, it's a long season, we know it's a long season, so on and so forth. But there must be some sort of up and down feeling when things are going well and things aren't. So I guess what I'm trying to ask is, like, is they're saying they're calm, but when they get swept and look horrible against the Mets, are they really as, hey, long season, we're just looking to the next one, as they say they are? Or is there a little bit of what we feel when we're watching it inside the clubhouse when things are going particularly well or particularly poorly?
I look at it this way. We're all human. We're all, you know, and a lot of times basically very similar. I don't see how they can say the Mets aren't in their head. If the Mets aren't in their head, then why can't you win a game there? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And for me, if they're not in your head, then prove it. But they can't. So right. I think we have to hope that if whenever we play the Mets, that if we do, we have home field advantage. Because I don't see them winning there.
Wow. It's just like that. You don't think we can do it.
Well, why aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point.
They're facing the best we have.
Right.
And we didn't win.
Well, so let's hope we win that division.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, one of their both trade deadline acquisitions looking great at this point. Durand, obviously. But Harrison Bader not only has been a good player, but the attitude feels like something that they've needed. How much can the attitude of a guy who seems fearless, kind of cocky, that sort of thing. Do you think that can help a clubhouse in injecting energy like he appears to have?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, but it's energy like that is great as long as you're doing stuff. I mean, if you're going up there and punching out all the time and you got great energy, it's not going to help the club a whole lot. And so I think it's the energy, but it's also the energy with results. You know, personally for him, doing things, base hits, running the bases, we'll leave out the throw from the outfield, but that energy is great. I think it's tremendous. And I think getting Stubby back, I would imagine a lot of faces in that clubhouse lit up having him back, the energy that he brings. But you have to produce with that energy too to make it worth something, and I think that's what he's doing. I think he's throwing his energy out there, but he's showing these guys like this. Let's have fun. Let's come out and play this game, and you know, show up a little more, show a little more excitement, a little more, you know, getting after it. And you know, he's a different cat, and I think that's good for the clubhouse.
Well, listen, you tell Stubby was back in LA because all of a sudden there's club music playing behind Rob Thompson in his post game interview the other day. So you could tell he's back. So I think the bullpen feels like it's in a pretty good spot, but the one now seemingly big issue is Orion Kerkering. What are you seeing from him?
I don't know. It's hard to say from a mental standpoint because you're not in his head, and I can't gauge that. I've heard a lot of people say the moment's too big for him. Not you know on air like you guys, but. People I talk to, they think the moment's too big for him. And he's been in the back end of the bullpen for a while. He's pitched some good games back there and has gone on streaks where he's pitching great. And I don't know if it's, you know, coming down to more crunch time or feeling like he has to do more. But it comes down to the command. You have to be able to throw strikes. And he goes through stages where, like, I look at control is being able to throw a strike, command being able to throw a good strike in the strike zone where you want. He's lost that ability or he loses that ability at times to have that, even the control just to throw a strike. But I think if he could get in his head, I hesitate saying it because you hear it all the time and you're probably sick of it, but if you can throw a fastball down in the zone every now and then, you're going to have a little more success. Baseball proves that. I mean, you watch any game, you watch guys that can pitch at the knees, they have more success. That's just plain and simple. I look at Stott the other day, who's swinging a bat great, playing great. He went up at the plate and took three pitches, all at the knees, three in a row. He didn't swing one, thinking they're low, and he gets called out on strikes. Like that, there's so many times where I look at games like that and I go, doesn't that register with anybody? Doesn't that register with our pitchers if they watch a game? Don't they see that? Can't anybody recognize that? But I think that's, you have to be able to do that. I think if he would do that more, with his stuff is good. There's no doubt about it. But Duran's stuff is good too. But if you throw it, you know, thigh high to the belt in the middle of the plate, you're going to get hurt. And if you can't throw it in the strike zone, you're definitely going to get hurt if you're walking people. And it's just, I think he's just got to get to him, into himself and just convince himself. Sometimes you go through struggles like this, you go, oh no, man, what have I lost? Am I doing? I don't know what's going on in his head, but I think you get back to where even if you're struggling, you go, you have to lie to yourself sometimes a little bit and go, I can do this. And really understand that you've done it before. He's done it before. So I think he needs to somehow get back into that frame of mind of that he's done it before, that this isn't, it shouldn't be that tough. Don't make it that tough on yourself. I don't see a mechanical thing different with him from many other, you know, from past games. So it's more than anything, I think it's a mental thing. Something gets in his head where the three things you can think about that I talk about, used to talk about when I was coaching, the three things you can think about when you're pitching. I have to, I can't, or I'm going to. And I think he's letting a lot of this, I have to and I can't, into his head instead of I'm going to. You know, I can't hang this pitch. Go ahead.
It seems like with Kerkering, when things go bad, he starts to unravel. It's funny to watch him versus Taiwan, right? So he's got way better stuff than Taiwan Walker. But yeah. Taiwan, they could hit a ball 700 feet, and he's the same guy the next pitch. He seems completely unaffected by it. Whereas Kerkering, if things start to go wrong, he doesn't get a call that he thinks is a strike, then you can almost see it in his face. Maybe I'm projecting, but it feels like when things are going well, he is fine. But when things get tight, he starts to unravel a little bit. And that, you know, you're nervous about that because he's going to be in there in big spots in the playoffs. And it does seem like a mental thing when he's up there.
I think it's so important to, and I think you see that when the leadoff man gets on base. I think that's where I see it maybe a little bit if it's there, that, and it's so easy. The leadoff guy gets on, whether you walk him, a base hit, whatever, the wheels start turning, oh, no, here we go again. And if you, once you get that going in your head, you're done. It's just, I mean, you can't let that come into play. I mean, you have to fight it, and if you have to disengage and get your head straight, disengage and get your head straight. Get your thought process back to what you're going to do with that baseball and not what you can't do or what you have to do. So, and I do think it's a very simple fix, but you have to recognize it, and before you can try to fix it, you have to recognize that there's something going on there wrong.
I'm sorry.
We got
turn down
going.
The speakers, guys.
Got things going on here, Ron. Right. I can see
Thank
that
you.
For sure.
Yeah.
L.A., this is going to be a question that we're going to be debating until, you know, the game actually happens. But as of right now, who would be your game two starter behind Chris Sanchez?
As much as I think I'd love to see the left-hander split up, Suarez and Sanchez and Suarez.
Ike wants you to say Nola. Ike wants you to say Nola. We're not putting Nola. Yes. Come on.
Come on, LA.
for me, that's their decision. They make the money. I would right now, just from a success standpoint, I would say Sanchez Suarez.
There it is. Sorry, Ike. Sorry, Ike.
Good answer.
I think because you want to, and I think they want to separate the lefties, Suarez and Sanchez. I think they'll go with Nola in the second.
There we go.
Wow. Final question, LA.
Yeah.
We didn't ask you this last time, but now that it's happened twice, I have to ask you what you think of Bryce Harper wearing the opponent's colors.
No, no. We were doing so well.
Well. Look, we all love the Attaboy Harper shoes and gloves and yellow.
L.A., did you get your rivalry pack for
the
next series?
When you said it's happened a couple of times, I thought you were going to ask me about, do you think they're going to work on rundown?
God forbid, right?
But, by the way, happens the exact same time he wears the rivalry pack. We screw
exactly.
up the rundowns. So, yeah,
exactly.
It's bad luck. I think we can all say it's bad luck.
It's a different look. But that's Bryce. That's Bryce. Bryce
he is the showman.
He has a reason. So I'm going to leave that with him.
All right. Sounds good. All right, LA. Well, hoping for another win tonight. Let's win that series, get out of there, and then deal with the Marlins and the Mets next week. Appreciate you as always, LA.
You got it. Can I say go Phils and go Eagles too?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Go Birds.
You can give a go Birds. Yeah.
All right. Go Birds.
There it is. All right. There he is. Larry Anderson. Man, I give L.A. a lot of credit.
Yeah.
Because L.A. doesn't like the rivalry pack, but he was smart.
He stayed away from it.
He's learned a lot. He's learned a lot, that Larry Anderson.
By the way,
yeah.
It's Lizardo game two if they're at home and Ranger on the road.
I think Ranger handles the road better than Lizardo probably
Correct.
Does. Ranger's got guts. I trust Ranger with a big start in the playoffs, even if he doesn't have the stuff.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. The Mets series is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
Walker Buehler starting game four, Ike, too. We're getting Knowles out of there.
Out of there completely, huh?
No, I'm just kidding.
Wow.
Just kidding.
Either Walker Buehler will come in the third inning when Knowles has let up five runs and three home runs in the first two. 215-592-9494. Jordan in Princeton. You're on WIP. What's up, Jordan?
Good afternoon on an Eagles Eve, gentlemen. It is feeling fantastic today, isn't it?
Yep.
You're always feeling fantastic, Jordan.
I like feeling good. It's much better than feeling bad. I highly recommend it.
Absolutely. What do you got, Jordan?
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall! Did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
So today,
can't do it anymore. Can't do it anymore. It's not on you, Jordan. It's on us.
How do we fix that, though? Yeah, what do we do about that?
Well, we could.
Never mind.
What can we do? What can we do, Spike?
Well,
Rod's standing over there.
It's like every show we do. Just can't talk to the callers.
Imagine how bad Creed's going to sound.
I don't care. It'll sound good in here.
Wait, is T.O. going to sing Creed, by the way?
That's the goal?
Well, he's going to be here.
That's what I mean. You're still going to do it, right?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, if T.O. knows the words, he can sing along.
Is there any guest you wouldn't do Creed for?
No.
If we had Jalen on,
like
maybe.
Not do it, too.
Yep.
Oh, Jalen through Creed would be amazing.
Would be incredible. The look on his face. The look on T.O.'s face will be great as well. I also think we're going to have a festive atmosphere during Creed and during T.O. as well.
Do you think he's expecting you guys to sing higher, though, if you're doing a Creed song?
No, we're not doing that today. All right. New question.
I'm just saying, how many fires can you start
over
here? Yeah. T.O.'s probably like, oh, you mean higher, right? Yeah.
Elliot, you brought up Kevin Petullo. I will start with you. What do you think the chances are that Kevin Petullo is not the offensive coordinator first game of next season?
What?
40%?
30%? Really? 40%?
I mean, Brian Johnson.
40% because he gets a head coaching job or because it doesn't go well?
There is some combo in there. I think Kevin Petullo is a good coach, but promoting from within has not worked for this team. So Brian Johnson lost a job after 1 year. Mike Groh might have been here for 2 years, if I'm not mistaken, but he was short-lived overall. I think Petullo would be a good head coach. I just think him and Sirianni are too repetitive together. Like, they've been together for all these years. Nick has said Petullo has helped in every decision he's made since he's been here. So,
and that's why he's not going anywhere.
And I'm not sure why I'm supposed to believe it'll be any different. And maybe they'll be good enough that it won't matter, but my worry is, on a year where you're going to need to spice things up a little bit, can they do it?
My question would be,
can do it if the X's and O's don't move by themselves. It's the Jimmies and the Joes that make the X's and O's look good.
That's what a real football guy
is. I mean, it's the players executing that's going to help the situation out. It would have to be awfully bad for Nick Sirianni to fire his good friend after 1 year.
So that is a good point.
It had to be pretty bad for that to happen. I don't see that happen.
That is a good point where I think Kevin Petullo being fired would be a really, really tough pill for Nick Sirianni to swallow. So I agree that
when you know he stood on the table
him. That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, I bet there was some conversation between...
About bringing somebody in.
Yeah, with Sirianni and Howie and Jeff, and they said, look, you've earned this, but this is your choice. Like, you will be judged on some way, on some level, ultimately, by you making this decision. Because it wasn't in his hands the way before. And that leads me to question two on the Petullo thing. I know that Nick was involved in some way in offense last year. He's involved in everything.
Yep.
But I would also say that them going outside the organization, hiring, hiring Kellen Moore, I think he was probably less apt to go in and saying, I think we should do this, than he might have been if he knew the guy. So I guess my bigger question is we know that we think Nick Sirianni's not great at play calling. That's not what he does. Mm-hmm. But if the offense isn't going well, does he feel more empowered this year to go in there and tinker on his own because of the relationship that he has with Petullo as opposed to the relationship he may have had with Kellen Moore?
Yeah.
And do you think that's a good thing?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think it is. I honestly believe he helped Kellen Moore last year. Kellen Moore has never been known as an offensive coordinator that is a running offensive coordinator. When he was in Dallas, he helped Dak Prescott become one of the better passing quarterbacks in the league. So them adjusting and going to the run game last year, as last I remember, when they did it in 2021, Nick Sirianni was here. Right? I know he's a wide receiver coach, but Shane Steichen isn't here anymore. So the idea of the running game and leaning on the running game, they did that in 2021, right? Where they were just a running football team. I'm only saying this to say that Nick Sirianni, I think, if he feels the need to put his imprint on the offense or have more input, I think he'll do that. I think he'll entrust Kevin Petullo to do his thing. He's going to be a part of the meetings. He's going to be a part of the game planning. But the flow of the game and those type of things, I think he's going to lead to Kevin Petullo and Jalen Hurts. Right? And here's the other thing. If things aren't going well, what do you think he's going to do? Just let the thing crash? Of course he's going to.
Well, we saw last year.
They're going to have to do something.
Yeah. I think Nick has always been more involved in the offense.
And I think he was a big reason why the offense changed to what it changed to last year.
100%.
Well, because the offensive linemen went to Nick. They didn't go to Kellen.
Well, and at least by the way
the story is told.
And Nick and Jalen talked a lot during the bye week about the offense, right? So I think Nick was involved a lot with that. I also think that play calling is an important role for sure. But Nick and Jalen probably have way more influence over this offense than whoever the offensive coordinator is. Nick sets like the tone of what the offense is. They watch the film together throughout the week, deciding what the plays should be, what they like on third down, what they like on red zone. Jalen calls, I would guess, almost half the plays that are run on the field anyway. Mm-hmm. So I do think, Nick, when you say, you know, he was involved to a certain degree last year, I'm not like pushing back on you. I'm just saying I think he is more involved than maybe the premise.
Than we realize.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
I agree. And these guys are of like mind. When we sat down with Coach Sirianni a couple weeks ago, he talked about that when I asked him about that. I asked him, why does he trust Kevin Petullo? They're like, he's like his right-hand man.
Well, not to mention, Jeffrey and Howie would not have hired Sirianni 2.0 as offense coordinator if they didn't believe in Sirianni as an offensive guy. Like, they were behind the scenes last year. They saw how the offense – and Kevin Petullo was important because he brought new ideas. He added certain things. But in terms of the overall offense, I still think Nick had way more to do with it than Kellen Moore did.
Oh. Yeah.
Hmm. Overall?
I think
Kellen Moore was just calling plays.
I don't know if that was the plan going in.
I don't think that was Kellen Moore. Watch this offense in New Orleans and see if it looks like last year.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you on that. 215-592-9494.
Now, they don't have the players that we have here.
Right. They don't got the Jimmys and the Joes.
Coming up next, I've got some over-unders for Elliott and Ike for the Eagles this year.
Okay.
We have some normal stat ones, but then some fun ones that I threw in there as well.
Not
so
you,
Jack as well. But no. Jack's going to take the under on all the passing ones. And if he takes the over, he's just going to go, daw, afterwards.
I just hope they hit Kadonis.
And he's watching the Tigers-Mets game. So, I mean, like, what are you?
Hells is about to blow it again.
There we go.
And Jalen Lowlights.
All right. We're at Rally in Royersford at McGurk's, presented by Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey. This is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. It is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Elliot with us as well. We are at the Rally in Royersford at McGurk's, presented by Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey. Battle no respect for Royersford, calling it Royersford in the returns.
As do I.
No. We will respect Royersford.
Too much complaining.
So no. I have respect for the folks of Royersford. Now, if you're listening, and we're going to test something with the phone lines.
Great.
We were having issues with the phone lines. There's a little bit of delay. So what I'm going to do is just open it for whatever you want to talk about, the next three callers. If it is for me or Ike or Elliot, whatever you want.
Or me.
Or Jack.
Thank you.
Just so we can test to see if it works well or not. So 215-592-9494. I am going to throw the biggest tantrum you ever saw. You ever saw. The biggest tantrum you ever saw.
Ever.
Ever saw, yeah.
Well, at least we're not in the studio until next Wednesday.
Yeah. It's fun experiencing remote Spike, though, I will say. I don't think I get the full experience at
I get tight. Admittedly, I got to try it. I try to be better at it. Right. I absolutely try to be better at it. And in fairness, if we were in the studio and that same thing happened, I would throw the same kind of tantrum.
Right. But no one would see it besides.
No one would see it. Yes.
The nice part about this is that everyone here will see it.
Yes.
And you too.
Well, why don't we try with, we'll start, 215-592-9494. Derek and Paoli, you're on WIP. What's up, Derek?
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure on me, huh?
You can handle it.
You sound better, honestly.
Yeah, you can handle it.
You got
it. Yeah.
Oh, listen, so I was just calling because every time you bring up Jalen, we could all agree that his year last year was bad, right? It wasn't great, right? But when y'all say the first four games.
I wouldn't say bad. I would say
it wasn't his best year.
For sure, yes.
But when you say, like, oh, they had to go change the offense, right? If A.J. Brown not playing for the first month of the season after they left Brazil. And then Devontae Smith got hurt, too. Like, wouldn't you go change the offense, too, though?
That's not why they did it, though.
Well, I mean, you should, don't think it's a fair point.
No. Well, but hold on, man. So AJ played plenty of games last year. Devontae played plenty of games last year. It didn't have. They didn't switch the offense because the wide receivers were hurt. They switched the offense because they were turning the ball over. The offensive line. I mean, the story is out there. The offensive line went into Nick Sirianni's offense, said that we should lean on the run game, and they decided that they would be best playing defense and leaning on the run game because they're turning the ball over too much. And at no point in any of what I read, and Tim McManus wrote a whole thing about the bye week last year, at no point was it, we decided to do this because the receivers were hurt. And the receivers came back and they kept doing it.
Well, what wasn't it working though? So I'm like, that's my whole point. Like, you can say that, but it's like, you wouldn't change the offense if your top two receivers weren't playing. You would just go out there and run the same exact offense. Or would you try to lean on a running game, right?
But Derek, AJ played 14 games last year, I believe.
How many games did he miss when the season started, though?
Right? He missed two of those games, if I remember correctly.
No, wasn't it?
He came back in October, bro. That's what I'm saying. He missed almost a month. Right?
Okay, but then he was back.
Okay, but I'm saying once they came back, they started rolling. The offense was rolling. I'm not taking up for Jalen Hurts by saying, like, this is why this happened. I'm just saying when people tell the story, it's like, as a fan, I'm like, well, they should have changed the offense because they were missing their top two receivers. So why not give the ball to Saquon Barkley to see what he could do? They brought him here for that reason. They gave him the ball, and he took off running with it. So it was like, why would they force feed something if something else is working? Like, they had the Eagles offense.
Yes, if that's what happened. But if we remember the offense from last year, and last year ended great, so it paints everything else in a different light. But a lot of what we talked about last year was their inability to get the offense going in the beginning of games. They might have scored, what, 3 first-quarter touchdowns last year, and it was a consistent thing. It happened all year. So when you say their offense was rolling after they decided to change it, I would disagree with that. Now, they found
Saquon
something that worked.
Rolling, though, right? Saquon was rolling, right?
But they weren't rolling as an offense. Right? But hold on. We can also look at the history of the NFL and look at, like, The Rams had Marshall Faulk and were able to also throw the ball. The Cowboys had Emmitt Smith and were also able to throw the ball. The Baltimore Ravens last year that had Derrick Henry, who, by the way, almost rushed for as many yards as Saquon last year, and they still threw the ball. Detroit Lions had 2 great backs last year, had one of the best rushing attacks in football. They threw the ball. Like, Buffalo also had a great rushing attack last year, and they didn't throw the ball a lot, but they certainly threw the ball substantially more than the Eagles did. So, like,
they all have one thing in common, right? They didn't win the Super Bowl, right? That's what I'm saying. Like, it's a lot of...
There it is, yeah.
Right?
Yes, they didn't win the Super Bowl. What does that have to do with how they played in the regular season? Doesn't have anything to do with it.
Well, it has everything to do with it because the end goal was to win the Super Bowl, right?
Yes, right, the end goal is to win the Super Bowl. Did the offense No, Derek. But we're I appreciate the call, Derek. Like, that wasn't the plan, and I struggle with the AJ Brown and Devontae Smith were hurt.
Yeah, so I don't agree with that. They changed it because Jalen was turning the ball over. Like, they absolutely had a turnover problem, and they decided to go to a running game so that Jalen wouldn't turn it over as much, for sure. But Jalen then also did not turn it over, and I think he had a large majority of games, or a majority of games, where he did pass the ball well enough to win.
Well, yeah, they won.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean,
right.
Yeah.
I disagree with his point that it was because of the injuries. It was because of the turnovers.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I do think what's lost in this a little bit is that in 2021 when they went to the running game, I think that was absolutely like Jalen was not playing well enough. They could not pass the ball at a high level.
No,
that's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
I think it's at least worth mentioning, or as part of this, they had maybe the best rushing attack of all time last year. So going to it and committing to Saquon was not a last ditch, like, we have to save the season thing. I also think part of it was they were an elite, elite running game, and they decided if they could run the ball at an elite level, control the clock, and take care of the football, that was a winning formula. I'm not excusing Jalen, honestly, but I'm saying, like, they did not go to Miles Sanders.
I know what you're saying. And in fairness, some of that is a part of it, right? They started running the ball. They may have done it initially out of necessity to stop turning the ball over, but they got to a point where they were doing it so well.
Yeah.
Why would you go away from it? Like, literally, Saquon, I mean, he turned into something that we had never seen.
It's the best rushing attack we might ever see.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.
So well,
when he was that good, it's hard to go away from him.
Yeah, I mean, yes, I would agree with you.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yes. He was so good, they were like, even when the receivers weren't necessarily happy, they were like, we're still going to run the ball.
Yeah. The issue was just for a stretch of the season there, I would say like the midway point of the season, the passing game just wasn't consistent enough. Now, when they needed to in the playoffs, it was consistent enough, and it was good enough. But I do think the Saquon part of this is important when we go to, like, well, they took the ball out of Jalen's hand because they had to run it. Like, they went to an unbelievably effective rushing
attack.
Like,
when I think about two games, the Rams and the Ravens game in consecutive weeks. That's coming off the big Washington Thursday night win.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? I look at those two games, and I thought that was the toughest part of the schedule that they needed to get through.
Absolutely.
They didn't show a lack of throwing the ball in those games because they couldn't, as much as Saquon at that time was on such a run. Mm-hmm. It was like, did they need to throw the ball? You see what I'm saying?
Yes. Like, no, absolutely.
Need to throw the ball?
And also, the thing, by the way, real quick with Saquon, the thing about Saquon that, even if all things are equal this year, that may limit the effectiveness of him. Not limit, but limit to getting where it was last year, mm-hmm. is the explosive plays. Because their run game was good, but was also, for a lot of first halves, and I know this is a run game in general, was like kind of pedestrian, except for the giant plays he had. Mm-hmm. So even if he has half the number of giant plays, that can change the texture of how everything feels.
Yeah, and look, it's hard to predict how many explosive plays he'll have. I'll just say that I was blown away how good he looked in training camp. Maybe I had heard a full off season of, well, he's going to take a step back, you know, but just watching him in camp, he looked unbelievable. So I would not rule out him having the same year as this year as he did last year. Like, I think that's entirely possible. But to get back,
what, 2,000 yards?
Yeah, I think he could do it.
I'll tell you what. He'd be the first back in the history of this league to ever do it.
No, for sure. I'm not.
So, I mean, but you're saying it like it's.
Well, but
is that even a good, like, do you want him to go for something like that?
Well, so this is going to be my next point. I do think if you can win running the ball, that is the preferred way to win when you think about controlling the clock, taking care of the football.
Yep.
Running it is a far less riskier play than passing it. Like, there's fewer negative plays. You don't turn it over as much. I do mostly co-sign with the you win by passing. I get that. But if you have a rushing attack that can win for you, that is the preferred way.
215-592-9494. I will give the guys some over-unders right after I tell you about Guida. How many windows do you have in your house that are old and drafty and need to be replaced? I'm taking the over. Doors, too. I'm taking the over. Guida is the only place to go. It's the only place to go. They've been serving Delaware Valley for decades. And the reason is because they do a great job, they make the process easy, and they hook you up on price. Right now, it is the buy one, get one half off sale for Guida. It is exactly what it sounds like. You buy a window, expertly installed, triple pane, energy efficient window, you get another one 50% off. You buy a door, you get another one 50% off. You can mix and match, right? So you buy an entry door, you want to get a sliding door 50% off, you can do that. Doors and windows, you replace everything in your house, all the windows and all the doors, half of that project is going to be 50% off. So the more you need, the more you get, the more you save. Start your project with no money down and take up to 18 months to pay it off interest-free with Guida. This is for a limited time. There are restrictions. So call GUIDA today to schedule a free, no-obligation in-home estimate at 877-GO-GUIDA or visit them at goguida.com. That's goguida.com. All right. I have some over-unders. Some of them are directly from Sportsbook. Some of them are ones that I made up. First one, Jack, you go first.
Oh.
A.J. Brown, regular season receiving yards. The over-under is 1,100.5.
Easy.
Easy.
Under.
Oh, my God.
There he goes.
Under.
What a hater.
Not a hater.
Such a hater.
Ike.
Over.
I think he's going to miss time.
Now, that's why it's that low.
I am not even fantasy
team.
Now, what did he have last year? He had 1,087 or something like that? Yeah, that was the number last year.
What's crazy is he had almost 1,500 yards each of his first 2 years here.
Yes.
So
now, a lot of his good games last year came with McKee and Pickett.
Oh, my God.
Well, the bigger games did.
They did.
The bigger games did.
They remembered he existed.
Yeah. Well, there was a game and a half or two games.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Majority of the Washington game.
Yeah.
That they lost.
Elliott over
because
under,
Devontae dropped the ball.
And because Kenny Pickett turned it over to start the game.
Well,
he handed him 7 points.
Jalen Hurts turned the ball over in the Super Bowl.
And I've always said he did not play as well as people say in that game.
Okay, no,
well, he did. He was great.
I'm talking about
game.
This one.
Oh, yeah, true. Well, he was great in this one.
Okay.
But
Even though he turned the ball. Over or under?
Over.
Okay, so Jack goes under. Everybody else goes over. Okay.
Easily over.
Saquon Barkley, regular season rushing yards. 1,425.5.
That's a good number.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's good.
Ike first, then Jack, then Elliot.
That's a good number right there. 1,425?
Yep.
That's a good number. It's a good number, man. Because I say between 1,400 and 1,500. That's a good number. I'll take the over, but I don't think he goes over 1,500.
I'll take the over.
I'm taking over.
Yeah,
I'll
take the over. He looked... Again, unbelievable. In
I'm taking 1,675. Okay. That's my number for Saquon. All right.
Can we get alternate lines on Saquon's year?
I'm sure you can.
They should.
Yeah. All right. Total legitimate controversies within the Eagles season. Now, last year, I consider I consider Nick yelling at the fans a legitimate controversy.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Over under 1.5. Legitimate controversy.
Over.
Wow, Jack's going over as well.
Over.
Easily.
For sure, over.
Wow.
How many Eagles seasons haven't had?
Even last year, they were great, and there was a controversy. Yeah. The AJ saying the passing game wasn't good enough.
Yes.
I think like 3.5 is a better number for this.
Wow. Well,
it was 3 last year.
Yeah.
Now, do you consider the thing AJ said and what BG said different controversies or same controversies?
Different.
That's the same controversy.
So I think different. Because
how's it different?
Well, because AJ started it with the passing thing, and then BG made it about their relationship. For me, I view them as two different things.
Okay. So we say we're all going over 1.5.
Yes.
What if I set it at 2.5?
I mean, I would probably take the over on that. I mean, this is a
I don't know what controversy is. Like, we're just talking about little fires that we put out. Things happen.
So I would say the base level of controversy is Nick Sirianni yelling at the fans and over.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I could see at least 3 of those.
Okay. One more before we get back to the phones. How about... passive-aggressive comments made from a defensive player about Vic Fangio. Over, under 1.5.
Elliot's been waiting for this one.
Yeah, Elliot first.
Well, Devin, what now? I'll go over.
Wow.
Yeah, right.
Under.
I'm going to go under easily.
I don't know.
Now, remember...
Well, first of all, give me the guy who was going to dare to utter anything but respect about Vic Fangio publicly. Yeah, give me that guy.
Yeah.
Jalen Carter?
He could. He just
could
doesn't talk a lot. Yeah, he
I said,
could.
Give me a guy. You gave me one.
Adoree Jackson?
When he gets benched in week 3.
I tell you, Adoree Jackson does that, he won't be here.
He'll still say it. I agree, he might not be here after.
Okay, well, I'm just saying. My only point is, you're fearing for your job and job security. I don't think any of these guys are in that position to be questioning Vic Fangio publicly.
I mean,
I'm just saying, players have
done it before.
Yeah, but those were older vets that he didn't inherit, and we see what got them. Are any of those guys still on that Dolphins team?
I don't know.
They're all gone.
Yeah.
Also, you can reach a level of respect, especially in that locker room.
They just won a championship.
You guys never said anything about Jim Johnson publicly.
Never.
Exactly. There's like the same-ish guy.
Jim Johnson was also never run out of the team he was on, though.
A good point.
The point is, in 11 or 12 years, no one ever did it. That's the point. And we had controversies. We had we had that on our team. We had outspoken players.
And I think the only guys that made comments last year were Huff and Devin White.
Yeah, right? Two disgruntled
players.
It was
only those two guys. Now,
rightful comments for what it's worth.
Now, I think this year, if they're...
Good points.
There is a possibility defense won't be as good. There is a possibility players are going to get blamed. And when they get leaned on... See, the thing that's... Now, was Jim Johnson... We know Vic Fangio has no problem calling people out publicly.
Jim had a little bit more of a softer hand when it came to that.
Yeah. Vic Fangio is a little bit different in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. 215-592-9494. Zach, who appears to be here at McGurk's. You're on WIP. What's up, Zach?
Where's he at?
What's going on?
In the parking lot.
What's up, Zach?
Oh, there he is.
My question is, do you guys think the Eagles should run the push on the first play of the game just to kind of troll the league for trying to ban it?
Do you want them to all flip off the cameras, too, after they do it, or what?
And they all whip out their dude wipes?
Yeah. I thought you were going to say something else, and I was like, what are you talking about?
I don't think the first play, but I do think the first play against Green Bay should be the tush push.
The first drive. The first drive should just be the tush push.
Well, I don't think
we do
want to
win the game, don't we? Yeah.
Just one drive.
First play. I absolutely think first play. I think first play against Green Bay, not first play against Dallas. I think they should... They should score. If they lose the game tomorrow, it should be because the defense didn't hold up, not because they didn't score enough points. At least 35 points tomorrow. I want at least 35.
I mean, 35 is a pretty high bar, just throwing that out. How many times did they get over 35 last year?
All I know is the offense was a mess against Green Bay, and they scored 34.
Yeah, that's fair. But did they get 34 in the other three games? I don't think so, right?
He's
talking about the opening game.
No, I know, but I just think...
Well, but then we had the AJ injury, remember, which is the excuse for everything.
It's a fair point.
Yep.
No, I agree with you. I think the Cowboys' defense is worse than the Cowboys' offense.
Yeah.
There's just not as many good players on the defense. The Cowboys' offensive line is bad, which is obviously...
Well, they brought over a decent player in Clark.
Yeah, Kenny Clark's good. Yeah. The other defensive tackle, whose name I can never pronounce.
The other... What's the linebacker? 13? Forget his name. Oh, he was a good player.
Well, let me. You both seem a little nervous.
They got bland because it's the first game of the season.
Yeah. So
the Eagles. Hold on, real quick. So let me explain why.
Yep.
First of all, Elliott gave mixed reviews coming out of training camp, so it's not like they were all in there operating on all cylinders
for sure
in training camp. They didn't have preseason.
Yep.
Right. Landon Dickerson has been out. He's going to play his first game. You got a charged up Cowboys team coming in, knowing that. The Eagles are sitting fat and happy on banner night. What better thing to do than ruin the Eagles' opening to their season by coming in and ruining banner night? When you're a team on the road and you're a division rival, those are the type of things that you use as motivation coming in. I'm just telling you. And you got a quarterback over there who feels like he owns the Eagles. And you got a corner that we don't know if he's very good. And we got a safety out there that everybody is nervous but me about having out there in Sidney Brown. So that's all I'm saying is that the defense could be the reason tomorrow why the game is closer than it should be.
I would also add that the Cowboys as an organization have now been clowned for about a week straight.
Man, I'm telling you.
I do think tomorrow night.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, Ike has mentioned the rallying cry.
Yeah. Just like, of course they're going to win the game after they trade Micah, feels from just like a plot standpoint. Somewhat likely.
I think the only thing I worry about is the Eagles coming out flat.
That's what I'm worried about. The Eagles are the better team, no question. But the first game of the season, you just don't know how it's going to flip.
Well, don't worry. They'll be in the locker room.
The damn Bengals lost to a rookie quarterback last year at home in New England.
But that's why they played everybody in their preseason this year, by the way. Yeah, because they – what are they – there's something like – what Zach – what's his name, the coach?
Taylor.
He's like – what's something like 1-11,
I believe.
1-11 in the first two games of the year or something like that since he's been there. Yeah, I'm worried about the Eagles coming out flat. I think this could be one of the games where it's the end of the third quarter, it's 2-minute warning, and it's 6-3 Eagles or 10-6 Cowboys.
Well, let me tell you, if it's 6-3, that crowd ain't going to be happy at 6-3.
No, they'll be getting – I mean, look, they got booed at halftime of the last Super Bowl.
And they deserved it.
And I think I agree.
But, I think the score was loaded, too, at halftime, right?
Yep.
Like 10-3 or 10-6.
Oh, that was a sarcastic boo.
No, it was a real boo.
It was trying to pretend that we're still this tough football city. That's all that was.
Oh, wow.
What are you talking?
It was.
Do you want to elaborate on that?
Well, yeah. I've had the theory for years. That was more of a Bronx cheer than like a we're really mad thing. It was like, haha, we still have our, everyone thought we'd change after the Super Bowl. We're still going to boo you rather than they're really that mad. 215.
Yeah, I disagree.
I was going to say, did they boo any more that year? There was some other moments they could have booed.
There was a lot of boos that year.
Yes. 215-592-9494. Coming up next, Baldy joins us for the first Baldy appearance of the year.
This will be good.
Yeah, we'll hear if he will. Baldy disrespect me? Will Ike disagree with him?
Just a betting tip.
Yeah.
I wouldn't lay the 7.5. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, yes. Definitely. Oh, yeah.
It's 8.5 now.
Is it 8.5?
I thought I saw that.
Yeah, oh my God.
Tomorrow is a classic. Ike picks the Eagles by 5.
Yeah, but he gets all riled up. The glasses come flying off.
Yep.
And he's like, 28-23.
Yep.
Sounds about right. Yep.
We're at Rally in Royersford at McGurk's, presented by Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey. Baldy joins us next. This is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall. Did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's morning lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.